Okay, everyone, welcome. So this is the workshop on the MIX program. It's literally called MIX, but the three X's. I just want to walk you through how you can use this software because presumably this is one of the most sophisticated things you can DJ with on Linux at least. I actually am not sure if there are any solutions like that on Windows, specifically for Windows, which are under an open source and/or free license, but for Linux, pretty much you're stuck with MIX in a good sense. It's a good program. We'll go through a lot of the details of how to set it up. Some of it might seem intimidating, some not. But I'll need you to help me out, guys. So I will be sometimes explaining how something should be done. Maybe it's not super user-friendly. So I will be saying, truth is, and you will all have to say, Linux is hard. Okay, got it? So that's the keyword. So let's try it again. Let's try it. Truth is, thank you. Good. Oh, of course. We always try harder. So remember that phrase. That's going to be the trigger. And now let's start with the presentation. So first of all, I want to show of hands who you guys are actually seriously considering in using MIX or any kind of DJing on Linux, right? So the rest of you are kind of just let's see how it works, right? Truth is. So sometimes you just have to use whatever you got. So although you're not planning to DJ with that software, who knows? Maybe you'll have to use it for something else. So listen nevertheless. So I'll start with something cool. So this is my Akai APC Mini controller. So I will now start MIX because the screen has changed. I have to go and search for it, but it's somewhere here. There you go. So watch this thing carefully. Yay! Did you see this? Yeah, I did it myself. Okay, now, so I'll explain how. I mean, actually, this is super necessary, and MIX allows you to program that. So this is basically how it looks, but we'll start from a slightly different beginning. So let me go to here, interface. Let's go to this thing here. Okay. So typically, this is how you're going to start. You're going to start with this kind of view. So let me quickly load things over here. I can actually do that as well. Yeah, so here you have like a couple of tracks. And yeah, so okay. So you're opening that. And when you're reading about MIX, so let me maybe go back a little bit to the story of this. So MIX for a long time was looked basically like this. It was like two decks. You had a playlist. It actually had like the layout was slightly different. And for many years, MIX was, as far as I understand, because I was never a user of it at that time, was a pretty stable but very basic piece of software that DJs would kind of be able to use. If you have like two tracks, you need to kind of synchronize them by ear, then you can do that. And people seem to be pretty happy about it. There was like a community around the software and it was being developed. And I was writing in about 2017 an article called Linux Audio Overview, where I started looking at some of the kind of categories of software available on Linux and kind of honing that article towards people who have no idea what Linux is, but you kind of want to move on or move to Linux in order to start producing. And so this was kind of an overview. And I stumbled upon MIX 2.0. So I was so removed from that DJing parts of Linux because it was so unreliable or not interesting in the past that I actually completely missed MIX 2.0. In 2.0, the music is fine, yeah? It's okay. It's not too loud or anything. I just put it on the background, like let it, just so that it's not so boring just to listen to me, yeah? It's fine, yeah? Okay, anyway. So they put out a product that was very surprising to me because it featured four decks. It featured beat grids, which basically lay well. So when beat grids appeared in the first case of on DJing software, there was like an outcry for a certain segment of DJing population that it is basically a hoax because now you don't have to do anything. But of course, when you have four decks, what you can do is now instead of focusing on synchronizing things, you can focus on different things. It's like a completely different workflow. I think it was, if not pioneered, then at least popularized by Richie Houghton, who started, like, he initially started promoting that kind of workflow with Traktor Studio. It was called Traktor Studio back in the day. Today it's Traktor Pro. And so they came up with like this thing. I was really, really interested in that. And it turned out that Mix.o 2.0 is a very powerful software. So as you can see, it has beat grids over here. You have to edit that in advance. It kind of helps you set the beat grids, but then you're configuring it. So these kind of basic things happen. And of course, if I start the other track, it's like completely in sync. So you don't have to do anything. You can stop it at any time, start it, see it kind of jumps to the correct setting. So this was pretty cool. But let's, so you're starting this thing and you're thinking, okay, so let me see what are these four decks, what can I do with it? And you see only two decks, like, what is that? And you start searching around, and from this interface here, there's no way to get to the four decks. And I decided to start the workshop on Mix in talking about how they organize interfaces, because this is not very, well, it's a little bit confusing, let's put it this way, not very common way to do it. So there are several skins. They have skins for every, like, you can choose between several skins in the software. And each skin might have a feature that is absolutely absent in other skins, meaning that it will be just physically unavailable. For example, in the new Mix software 2.1, they have a skin that features 64 samplers, which is pretty cool. Wow, 64 samplers. But only one skin has it, and other skins don't. If a skin does not have it, that means you cannot use the feature. So this is a very special thing about Mix, is that these skins really, they don't just change the way the software looks. It actually changes the set of functions that are exposed to the DJ. So, no. So the answer, just in case, that's going to be streamed later. Yeah, streamed and recorded. So just so that people hear what the question was, is it possible to have a skin that incorporates all the features? Currently, the answer is no. Now, you can create your own skin. Truth is, Linux is hard, so that's very difficult to do. It's extremely difficult to do, and it's extremely difficult to do even if you know XML well. For people who have worked with XML in the past, which I think a lot of you, looking at these nested structures is still pretty hard. It's difficult to figure out how it's created. So I'll show you the skin that I'm using. And remember, I'm, of course, kind of forced to give you a perspective, like my own perspective, because that's how I interact with the software. Obviously, I'm going to be talking a lot about very basic things, but nevertheless, you're seeing my perspective. For example, I really want four decks and not two. So many people don't care about that. So this is a four-deck setup. You can actually remove the four decks and have it only two decks, and actually it starts like that, I think, and you have to actually trigger it like this. So this is the skin that it comes with, called Late Night. And then if you go to forums, people have their own skins, but this is not very easy to do. Let's see if I can show you how it looks. So So I just want to show you, you know what, I'll do it differently. I have a special folder with mixed stuff. There you go. So this is how the skin looks in 2.0. It's slightly simpler in 2.1, but it's still basically this kind of, so you have a lot of images, you have many XML files, and in order for you to change something, you have to find which XML file is responsible for this, then go into this and hope that what you're changing makes sense. So for example, for me, I actually used two controllers to work that thing, because there are too many things that I need to tweak. So the equalizers over there, I'm using a separate controller that I didn't bring today because it was just too heavy to bring all of them. But basically, they do it this way. So this is deck number one. This is deck number two. This is deck number three. And this is deck number four. And my brain just is not compatible with that kind of setup. I'm used to it being 1, 2, 3, 4 as opposed to 3, 1, 2, 4. I don't know, maybe just me. So I had to go into the skin and change it, which is why over here you can see that I have Luigi, which is my own personal scheme. And that's the only thing that it changes. It changes these things. So this is 1, 2, 3, and 4. That made me very happy. But so far at 2.1, they still don't have like easy ways to change skins and everything like that. So you'll have to do with what you have. In here, maybe make some minor changes, and you can also try some forums that they have a lot of user-made skins, but you will very quickly find that they're either literally just recoloring what you have, or they might not fit your use case. Nevertheless, this is a possibility, so keep that in mind. It is possible to make changes as simple as switch things around. I was not able, for example, to switch around these waveforms. So for example, if I'm playing these two, right? It's not very clear which one of them is there. So let me add two more files. So let's say all of them are playing, and I'll remove the low frequencies from here. That's right. So all of them are playing. Which one is where? I still cannot figure it out, and I've been working with this software for a year, if not more. I just don't understand how this works. So like you can kind of stop some of them and kind of okay. Oh, so these are, oh man. Oh, the same thing was with the mixers. However, in this case, I could not find a way to change that in XML. So, anyway, so let's move on. So this is not as bad as it seems. Like, don't get me wrong. Most of you probably don't even need this kind of setup, but so now there's another thing, just very quickly walk you through the preferences. They're actually pretty well made. You have a lot of things that you can go through here. Some standard stuff. I tried using several sound cards with mix. Works completely normally. You can have a pre-hear device, not a problem. For example, yesterday during my performance, I did not do that. Like, I didn't have a pre-hear function because one of the things that if you start shopping for laptops, you will very quickly find that articles, you start Googling best laptop for a DJ. You can very quickly kind of see whether they really know what they're talking about and not, because people who don't know what they're talking about are going to be saying, well, here are the high-end laptops that can, handle a lot of RAM, and then they will suggest something like XPS 13, which is what I have, and it has only two USB ports. It's like, no, it's not working. So this kind of sucks for me because I just don't have enough ports, but I did try it with a different laptop, and it works normally. So you have all of the things that you would expect from a software sound kind of configuration. Controllers, we're going to go through that later. Library, so there's a lot of options here. I actually did not use like external libraries. Who knows? I mean, I know that Traktor Pro actually still has problems with the iTunes library, so I would expect that maybe Mix is probably not much better here just because the industry in general doesn't seem to be there, but who knows? So then you have some interface stuff. So there's like a lot of options here, and there's really not a lot to talk about here. It's all out there, very, very clear stuff. And in general, I'm very happy with the way the preferences are made. Very nice UI. So now let's move to something more interesting and more practical. How do you set up your controller? And this is where it gets really hairy a little bit. Well, a little bit, a little bit. So first of all, so you got your controller. What do you do with it, right? You want to start somehow to connect what you're doing in the controller with the controls over there. So is there a MIDI learn function? Guys, I just want you to venture a guess. Your hands up if you think there's a MIDI wizard here, just out of curiosity. Yeah, I love the pessimism. Just two people raised their hands. Yeah, there is a MIDI learn wizard, but I'm glad you guys are pessimistic. Then it's going to make you really happy. Yes, they have it. So if you go to options and preferences, they actually have a MIDI learning thing here, like this, and it's pretty difficult to work with, I would say. It's not bad, but it's not easy as well. In the end, I mean, truth is, thank you. You can be enthusiastic about the same way you were non-enthusiastic about thinking that it has a MIDI learning wizard. So yes, Linux is hard, so you will have to program things. That's good news and bad news. So the point of my workshop here is to make sure that you realize it's actually not that bad and can be even enjoyable to an extent. But you will have to write things down in like code things a little bit in XML and JavaScript in order to really get that running. So that is a good point. So I was just told that unless your controller has mappings, there is one important consideration here, at least important for me as a person who doesn't just do like, okay, I'm going to just mix two things. I have four decks, right? So if I have four decks, I might have
use cases which do not help me. So if you look at the way the controllers are mapped, there are several controllers that come with maps, and you can actually examine them in XML as well, because in the end they're XML and JavaScript files. They will cater to a very specific use case. So if you're just like a normal DJ who just wants to do that, that is a good point. So thank you for bringing it up. However, if you want to customize it, add some, you know, your own functionality, and typically you want that, you will have to use more than just the MIDI Learn Wizard. The reason for this is because it's not flexible enough. For example, it will leave, first of all, several signals at the same time. If you later examine the generated XML file, it's pretty... It's like, remember those, if you're generating an HTML page through some tool that, you know, is like drag and drop, and then you look at the HTML code and you're like, what is this? Well, it's the same feeling, basically. But there's another important thing is that, for example, let's see if I have anything here that can... No, this one is not like this. I'm just trying to see if I have no... So on this controller, I don't think I programmed anything like that. Oh, no. For example, this. So see, I'm pressing the button. Look, the button is now red. Do you see this? It's not very well. Let me see if I can... What about this one? You see this, yeah? Boom. See, it becomes red. Loop. You see this, yeah? It's probably... So there's a little of sun here or too many lightning. I don't know. So the thing is that I'm holding the key and then it's red and then I let it go and it goes back to its previous position. So in order for you to program that, you have to program... like both the buttons to trigger the buttons, to button down and button up. So through MIDI Wizard, it's much more difficult. Sometimes I couldn't be able to do that, and it would always do that. If I want to do this, that it, for example, sticks, then I need to use XML. So let me show you how XML looks like. There are some tricks to this. So... this is the generated XML. Yep, reload, because I just changed something, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. So this is the generated XML. I just opened it. Let me... Yeah, okay. So as you see, this XML is random. Channel 1, sampler 4, channel 4, sampler 2. It's like completely random. It just takes all the functions and just dumps them into one file. And then it's extremely difficult to edit. And what I found the hard way was that I took this file, I edited it, I put everything in order. I spent like about 2 hours on this work. And then I loaded it into Mix. It got all my edits in, but then it spit out a file randomized again. And so that was a little disappointing. Nobody ever tells you how these things work. So in reality, what you have to do is this. You have to create your own file. So I created my own file for this. You can comment it. You can put it in any order. For example, this one has play channels. So it has just the play channels, 4 channels in my case, these buttons. And they're in one order. You put your hotkeys, whatever you want. So if I zoom out a little bit, like I have this structure over here, and everything is commented, and it's divided by spaces, and I can relatively easily find everything that I want. So then what I do is this, and this is where this is important because it'll save you a lot of trouble, but it's very like confusing, and I actually had to write this down. So if I want to load this thing, over here, it will now list both of these files. This is my file, which I just named APC, APC Mini, APC, and this is the generated file by Mix. So what you do is you always choose your file, you say apply, and it will then generate its file and use that file. So it's not using your file. Your file is just your kind of master file. It will always generate one. It's kind of like it's shitty when you realize how it works the first time, but once you understand how it works, it's actually even better because then you know that the program will not screw your file and you can just work on it and import it all the time. And also just has a better name. You can name it like I did, just APC without all of these dashes and everything. So that's a super important part because you can spend a lot of time on that. And then once you're there, let me tell you a little bit how this looks. So imagine that you don't need any JavaScript. JavaScript is for additional functions. You just need to map your controller. Then what you do is one moment. So let me, whoa, okay.
So I want to, I have this file with useful links. So I want to show you this. Documents. There you go. And useful links. See? And that's not it. One moment. Firefox. What I like about Firefox is that... Sorry. Nah. Don't like any much things about Firefox lately, unfortunately. I like this thing. Really like about Firefox. This is my selling point of Firefox. Okay, so guys, so they have this mix control page on the wiki. And basically, it tells you how to control mix. So in order for you to program it, it's pretty straightforward. So for example, channel is a deck in software. So they would, so this is this thing is a channel, this thing in the channel. So there are four channels over here. And so they give you like a list. Here is the list of things you can use. We were seeing hot cues over there. Let me show you. So hot cues, for example, right? Hot cue go to. So how do you use that? You go to your XML file and you say, okay, group, by which they mean channel, deck one, hot cue one, go to. So that means that in the software, boom. So there you go. See the hot cue over there? Boom, it jumps back there. If I press 4, it goes back there. And if you're playing it, see, it jumps around even in real time. So this is what you can use that for, especially if you like need to jump around to critical sections. And so in XML, this is how it looks like. You have your hot cue, and then you have your media number. We'll talk specifically about media numbers. And then you have status. So this status is very important. It tells you what the button does. So 080 is note off, 090 is note on. Then you have aftertouch, like I have the list here, but you can get it from anywhere. Typically, you will use note off and note on. So that means that if I press once, then it will create it will set a hot cue. Now, for example, if you want to do this, you press a hot cue, you let it go, and it triggers away, then you have to also set a same kind of code snippet, but put 080 there as well. And if it's a toggle, then it will kind of toggle it while you're holding it, and then let go, and it turns it off. So this is nice level of control. Now, granted, you can do that through UI, but it's good that you know you can have this through XML. I mean, remember, Linux is hard, so I mean, in a way, this is part of the culture, right? If somebody asks you, what are you doing? You're like, I'm DJing, man. Look at this. So, yeah, you do all of that. And now I'll give you information that it can also save you hours, if not days of work, in that these things, when you buy a MIDI controller, it typically comes with numbers, like with decimals. Right, so this is, I got my APC Mini. I need to program it. There is no like MIDI Learn wizard that I'm satisfied with. Therefore, I have to hand kind of program it. So I have this like picture that I got from the web, which lists all the numbers. Here's the problem: XML accepts hex. Ta-da! Right, so that's it doesn't translate the actual MIDI messages into decimals. So therefore, what I did was I actually created all the hex numbers. So I created actually that picture. I have decimals numbers here as well, so I have a separate layer for that. Yeah, and so I have that thing that I had to do because in order for me to quickly map or understand where everything is, I have to understand which hex number is it. And so 2A over here, I would be using the hex number. So this is important because there's another funny thing. I hate to say it, but truth is, yes, people are getting less enthusiastic about it because I think you're catching on. The thing is that while XML file accepts hexadecimals, this thing, JavaScript, accepts decimals, which is additionally fun, which is exactly why I did like a second layer, save that so that I can use it for later. So because eventually you would want to use that as well for your JavaScript. So that's kind of fun. So let me talk about JavaScript.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to work for functions. I see, I think they also say that specifically. But anyway, so let me tell you now how you add Java. So any questions regarding XML? I mean, I'm kind of rushing through it a little bit because there's nothing special. You go to look at their controls in the wiki, you then program it in a pretty you can take a look at how their XML is generated, therefore you can very easily translate it into your own. So like I without any knowledge of how that works, I just sat down and did it very quickly. It didn't seem to be very difficult. Now, the difficulty will come if you want to add additional functions, and you will want to do that because it will save you a lot of controllers. You will need less of them if you can pack more functionality into one, and also sometimes it's just required by your workflow. So in order for you to add JavaScript to this, what you need to do is like you create your JavaScript file. So this is the JavaScript file. You then link it to this thing, to the XML. And then if you want to, for example, program this for so this I have actually a JavaScript function if I'm starting the software. I'll explain why I needed that. Then you're actually linking it to a function in your JavaScript, and this is the function of play. So in my case, what it does is that if I press play during this set, I want to make sure that I don't accidentally stop the track that is playing now. So if I press play, it sends a signal that makes it blink. It also makes this thing blink, and these are buttons that allow me to load things. And so that's the you can do these visual cues if the controller supports that. By the way, in order for me to be able to color it, it's actually the first thing you might want to do. And this is this thing that, like, especially if you have like this kind of controller, you want to maybe mark your controls. So it is relatively simple. They give you in the wiki an explanation of how to do that. So basically, you can see over there, like I used that file that I got from the web. Because my like once you buy that, I didn't have the documentation inside. But in my case, it explained how to get the colors, what kind of media messages you have to send. So once you know that, you start this initialization function in it, and then you have to create all of these things like the array, which lists all the signals for that, and then you manipulate that. And so basically, I mapped all of my functions to colors as far as I could because this controller supports only three colors. So this, for example, are hotkeys, and this is just hotkey one so that I can see for four decks I have kind of these hotkeys things, and the red is just to distinguish between the four decks. These are loops. This is, for example, 2-beat loop, 8-beat loop, minus like half. And multiply by two. So for example, I press two, multiply by two, and I get a four. So one deck, second, third, fourth. This I don't. Th this I'm not using. This is the library. This is loading tracks, starting tracks, and then this is no. This is soloing. So like, I mean, you don't need to know my setup, but kind of. So you can color it if your controller supports it, and it's very nice. And you can also do that in real time. However, I noticed that Mix seems to be a little buggy there. So, for example, if I edit things in real time, it will see that. But let's see if I can do that. Let's say, yeah. And so it instantly changed it. And now you see the three buttons stopped being colored. And if I add that again, okay. So, but the problem is that it doesn't color it back. So, a little buggy. I don't know why. So, you still have to restart it for full operations. But you can kind of, in reality, you can change the JavaScript on the fly. What I'm thinking is that it looks whether the file is changed or not. That would be my guess. I don't know, but that would be my guess. I think it would be. That's I don't think that that's how JavaScript works. You don't have to do that, I think. But I'm not sure. So but I think no, I think. And it's also in terms of performance, it seems to be pretty performance, so I don't think that that's necessarily a problem. So now what can you do and why would you use the JavaScript functions? So apart from me showing you that, hey, I can do things like color things. You can also, of course, do many things at a time. So let me show you a meta button that I wrote. So this is how it looks. It looks scarier than it actually is. There's a lot of repetition here. Unfortunately, at least at Mix 2.0, like you have to do, like to make a lot of repetitions instead of, say, running loops. Maybe you can do it more simpler, but also one of the problems is that you want the code to be super readable. I want to just open it and quickly understand what it does. So don't judge me on my code, please. Or you can, I don't know. So yeah, so you kind of, you can do whatever you want. And the basic things is you're going to be using is engine set parameter and then also engine get parameter if you want to read some control. And then you have a certain amount of inputs that you can use. You can just, to be honest, use all of them. It doesn't really matter. Even if you don't need some of them, it doesn't seem to be a big problem here. But group, for example, is the type of which kind of deck I'm using. So, for example, how the meta button might look. So let's say that I have, very quickly, several effects here. And I want to start three tracks, right? So they're all here. And what I want to do is I want these tracks to start falling apart. And so I remove the synchronization. And I start doing things like adding, say, some feedback. So now it's like, it's becoming very weird, right? Like you're hearing just noise. And if I want to go from that to a new track, all I have to do is press one button. And what happens is that the other track starts, all the other tracks stop. The effect keeps on going because the effects are still on, but all the effects are turned off except for the track that I'm playing. So one button does all of these things at the same time. So it's pretty neat if you want to do that. And you can basically program any amount of buttons for any amount of functions, and at the same time send things to your controller. So you do want to do that. You do want to take advantage of that situation. But of course, that requires you to think about, okay, what can I do here? Can I actually, you know, take advantage of all the controls that there are? Some controls will be missing. For example, there are things that appeared in 2.1 but don't exist in 2.0. And while looking through their wiki, what you'll find are these small things, which say what was introduced in which version, and they're not like. The numbers are not ordinal. So, for example, it's like this, but you can have 1.9, this 2.0, so very misleading, but, I mean, documentation. At least it's up to date, so this much I can tell. So that's basically how the JavaScript scripting works. It's not that bad. It's just basic JavaScript. Even if you don't know JavaScript, all I'm using most of the time here is just if and, you know, switch, that's it. Now I want to walk you a little bit through some of the known problems that I experienced when using Mix and then tell you a little bit about Mix 2.1. So some of the problems that exist in Mix, and I'll be talking about, I will be mentioning whether it's fixed in 2.1 or not if I know. So one of the first things that I noticed is that if I say take a track and I load it, I'm like, okay, so I loaded it. Now I want to set a loop just like that so that it starts looped and I can start it and then kind of fade it into the next track. So what happens is this. So look at what it's doing. See? Suddenly it stops. Because for some reason, when you're just loading it, it somehow takes that bit as well. So how do you fix that? So let me load another track onto there. So you have to, you have to do this, and then it loads correctly. now this is correct. Now it's going to be a normal loop. That's just kind of seemingly a bug that they have. I actually think that they fixed it in 2.1, So if you want to use 2.1, I think it's not there. But right now, I'm not completely sure. So if I want to do that like from the get-go, I do this, then I do that. Now it's correct. Small thing, but nonetheless. Don't know. That's a good point. Let's see. The question is, do you have functionality so that you load the jack and it instantly jumps to the point? I don't know. I don't know. You have functions over here, so should be able to happen, but I have not tested it through JavaScript, and I would be very careful in saying, yes, it should work. It should work, but I don't know. Could work. It's not such a big problem because in the end, if you're starting a track, you actually don't want to start with that because if you have some sort of echo going on, not in this case, but for example, in this track, it was clear. So let me set. So you can kind of hear that it clicks. So in the end, I would still kind of give it a little bit, something like that. So there's another, maybe let me tell you this. The biggest problem with this software is that all of this is super reliable, never crashed on me even once. What's not reliable is the library. And this is something that unfortunately still plagues Mix and, you know, kills your time a lot. So you have a library and it's, you know, pretty neat. You can. It will automatically scan your tracks. It will try to understand what the BPM is. Usually, it's very accurate. It will also try to understand what the key is. Since I'm writing Minimal House lately for DJing, I have no idea if there is a key in music. Not in this kind of music, but apparently there is. And so I never actually checked it. I would say that this is kind of weird. I don't remember writing but anyway. So the problem is that from time to time, tracks are going to arbitrarily disappear from your library. And that's kind of not neat. I maybe have to talk about it. Let's say that you change your laptop and you want to move your library from one lap to another. Now, I want a show of hands. Who thinks that this is a seamless process? Just out of curiosity, who thinks it's a seamless process? So I see no hands. Oh, I see one hand. So we have one optimist. No, it's actually not bad, not that bad. But the problem is that if your directory changes, if you, for example, you have like home, you know, Luigi something, and then you like decide to change your name, and now it's home Nick something, you're done. That's it. No, not really. So what you have to do then is you have to go to the mix directory over here. So, oh, look at this. See? That those are the proofs that I was struggling before yesterday's performance. So this is what you have to look at. They have an SQLite database that they're using. And in order for you to fix things, you have to go there. And I have to show you this because, I mean, you know, so I'm using SQLite Man for this, and that's the only software that I could find that could, you know, have the job done. Before that, you could use a Firefox plugin, but it's no longer compatible with Firefox Quantum, so we're all out of luck, unless you want to downgrade that. So you have to go to track locations, and this is the important bit of the information they have in their FAQ, but I'm going to add actually new data to that. So here you have directory and location. So in my case, this is my work computer, actually, so because it's stronger, so I use it for this performance, so I had to install it, and on my work computer, I have this kind of different name. And so I had to change all of that. In order to do that, you have to run a couple of SQL commands that will change the directory. Now, there's another very important point to this, is this field over here, fs-deleted. And this is the culprit in many cases of things suddenly disappearing, is that, for example, do you see this? It says FS deleted one. So basically what it does is that it seems to mark tracks that are deleted or missing. That's the or missing. So that seems to be the flag that is deleted or missing. So if you have missing tracks, they're going to be here, but marked as deleted in the database. And if you have hidden tracks, which is the mix terminology for deleted, it's also going to be here. And they're also going to be FS deleted one. And so what sometimes happens is I can actually even show you now. That will destroy my library, but I'm willing to do that for you guys. Yeah. So look, we have a lot of files. I'm going to rescan the library. Oh, that's fine. No. Sorry, that doesn't matter. Yeah, so see, many files disappeared. If you search for them, they're all here. And yet, the files are there. The path is correct. But what if we now look into the database? Yeah. It's going, oh man, this is gonna be asking for every table. Okay. So if you look here, there you go. Now you see that a lot of them are deleted. See this thing? And so in order for me to fix that, I'll have to actually run a query that will make them zeros again and rescan the library and they will appear. But if I rescan the library again, they will disappear. So I have no, there seems to be some mechanism that looks, some additional parameter inside the software that's not in the database that somehow, for some mysterious reasons, doesn't like these specific tracks. And I have to say, it has nothing to do with their music qualities. At least I tried to understand it, but no. There are a couple of crappy tracks that were left and a couple of nice tracks that were deleted. So, if you're adding a new track, though, that's the interesting part, and you scan for it, then it scans it correctly and doesn't delete anything else. So it's very nice. People reported... There you go. So there was like a suggestion. You fix the database by hotkey and the controller. I think that's exact. You can also just press the button and it automatically prioritizes your bugs in the bug tracker. That would have been pretty cool. So this bug has been around for ages. It seems to be very random and it hasn't been fixed. But it could be a big deal. And during the Sonoy performance in October, that's or November. November, that's what I had. So there's a video of this. So I had, somebody was performing right in front of me and I was like casually sitting there, okay, I'm ready for my DJ set. And then I just add two latest tracks that I did. Okay, I want to play these things, rescan, and I'll see only these two tracks. I'm like, and then you can see me suddenly doing, so that was me losing my library. So yeah, it could be very distressing. Now let me talk a little bit about 2.1. The reason I'm not showing you 2.1 today is because I wanted to show you some of these things. And there are some very good changes that they introduced, which kind of break my mappings. And I just didn't have the time to really go through that because they released 2.1 in the beginning of this year, but I noticed it only like a week ago. So sorry. But I did, of course, install it, actually go through it. So I understand what they changed. So one of the most important things that they changed was the effects. And this was actually very nicely done because in their controller manual, they listed these changes long ago and said, okay, we're actually preparing for the effects framework. And so they had a lot of the mappings that would be used for the future. So that was very impressive for me that they thought it through. And basically what they came up with, and I'll go to useful links, just to show you how it looks, because it's enough for me to just show you the screenshot of what they did. They basically probably looked at Traktor, which I think is a good thing, because Traktor obviously is very like user-oriented software, so they come up with something that eventually becomes very tested features. So what they came up with, effect chains, and this is how it looks. Yeah. So basically the idea here is this. You can set up several effects, of course, and then you can set meta knobs. And do you see these things over here? So, for example, if you click on this one, that means if you rotate your knob to the right, it will also rotate to the right. If you click this thing here, then it will do the inverse thing. And then you can also have like halves. If you want to rotate only half of it, for example. So it's pretty cool. And they have some presets already set there. For example, Bit Crusher will do this thing and so on. And so you can do that. And it's very, very cool. I think this is, you know, very nice work. The other thing that they did was add much more effects. And this is where I was a little bit disappointed with the direction it took, because quite a lot of these effects turned out to be either I feel useless for a DJ software. For example, they have a plugin that just increases volume, and even if you like hover above it, it will say you can also use the gain knob over here, like this gain knob, which kind of defeats the purpose for me. I understand what they were trying to do. You're creating an effect chain, and let's say one of the effects somehow makes the signal quieter, so then you like add gain. But I feel that in the DJ software, if it would be like a DAW, okay, I get it. Sure, you're creating signals, but in the DJ software, I just think it's too granular. You have to somehow make sure that the software handles it itself without these complicated synthesizer things. And they also added a lot of equalizers. While it's great, and you can, for example, set different type of equalizers for every channel, pretty cool, I get it, but they also kind of duplicated all the effects of the like all the equalizers over here, which just doesn't make sense to me. These are not the effects that I'm looking for when I'm DJing and I want to create some effects on the tracks that are playing. I have enough equalizers, guys. That's it. So that would be my take on that. This is what they did with effects. I still like the approach, but I would want to see much more effects on there which are meaningful and not just kind of throw in stuff and say, oh, now we have a lot of effects. Well, half of them I don't even know how to use or why would I want to use them. Another thing that they did, and this is where, again, I'll probably be a little critical there, but I was telling you how we program XML and JavaScript. I want to ask you this, and I want your honest opinion. Forget about Linux. Forget about anything you know in your life about hacking. Just think as a DJ or a musician. You have to hack in, like do some XML and JavaScript work, and people say, okay, well, this is 2.0, no worries. We're releasing 2.1. It's going to be a major release 2 years later, very stable. What would you expect from mapping controllers? Like, there's already a MIDI learning wizard, so what are your expectations? Well, I'll tell you what my expectations are. My expectations would be that, yeah, we will further enhance the MIDI learning wizard, and now you'll be able to just visually quickly do that, and we'll remove all the bad things that were there with the wizard, and now it's going to be looking, for example, much more like LuxIntractor, or it's like visual programming interface. Okay. But that's not what they went for. And I was really disappointed by that because it actually became harder now. So they introduced Components.js library. And they're saying that it's easier to code controller mappings for Mix now. Easier. So let me show you how you should start. That's your start to easier program the, you know, your stuff easier. Now, I am a developer right now as a hobbyist, but I was a developer in the past. I mean, just recently, I sat down and started learning Angular and stuff like that because I didn't do that before. And what I'm trying to say with that is that I'm absolutely open-minded to new information. But this did not make me very happy because that meant that we're going one step further from actually delivering a non-developer-centric app and going again into programming stuff. And this does not seem to be like a simpler approach. It of course depends on what, you know, language you are using to program. And some people can say, yeah, well, you know, you have a constructor, you have a, like that's clear. But that in my view, and I value my non-developer centric view, is just even harder than what we've seen before. Because what I've showed you before were, hey, here are a couple of very simple functions that you can script down very quickly. Yeah, you just know if, else, for each, whatever. That's it, and you can get there. Now you have to understand the whole like, okay, first I have this function, then there's a constructor, then I like initiate that, initiate this. And so I don't know. I'm just lost. I'm not sure where to start here. And the fact that they actually created like a separate library and spend their time doing this, to me, is not the direction that I wished the software would take. It's their right to do that, but I'm saying that for me it was not something I was excited about. And finally, there is something that the reason why I did not use the 2.1 for yesterday's performance and for today as well, was because they had a bug which was very disappointing for me, and which means that I will not be using 2.1 in the nearest future until they fix it, and I don't feel that they will. Is that for me at least, the hotkeys went off beat. So the idea is this, right? You have something going on, let's say in a loop. And then you have another track going on as well. And let me just make it. And so you have two tracks playing, and now I want to jump around. See? It's always unbeat, no matter how much I jump. So in 2.1, the hot cues over here will frequently go out of sync, very frequently. Like I can do it like 5 times and it goes out of sync. So to me, this is an incredibly, you know, serious bug that is not production quality at all. I am surprised that not many people reported it. I know that at least one person in the forum reported it as well. But to me, that's it. It makes the software unusable. This is the difficulty of these kind of things, which is why I'm so impressed by Mix in general, is that there are so many things that can go wrong. And unless you're really testing it and working very hard on the software, they will. So Mix 2.0 and even 2.1, even with this small thing, is still incredibly impressive to me because they did a lot of things right. But that's where we are today. So that's the gist of what I wanted to say, and I'll open the floor to questions.
So you've described what you have within Mix to do the MIDI mapping and whatnot, and you've described that you don't really enjoy using any of their wizards to do so. Mm-hmm. So could you perhaps describe what would be the ideal case for you?
Yes. Okay, so that's a very good question. So I don't have to repeat it because it's in the mic, right? I want to just close this thing because it keeps reminding me that something has changed. Yeah, so I'm actually looking at the user case that I've seen in Traktor Pro. Basically, they have a wizard where it's like a huge table that you open up, and when you select a control, then you have kind of a visual programming tool where you can say, okay, I need invert it or whatever, like these options, and you can program I could be lying about this right now. Not lying, but making a mistake. But I think you can also program in some formulas there. But we could be wrong. But basically, you can do everything from the UI, and it's like a small kind of orange table where you kind of do that. And all the options are there, like node off, node on, like all these things. Because nothing keeps you from just adding several checkboxes. So what I would want is for it to be a table as opposed to their idea of a dialog box. So remember, I showed you in the beginning. It's like a dialog box popping out, and you're doing these things. And one of the things that it does is also cover part of your UI. So it's like, ah. Whereas they have in Traktor like a separate, like completely separate thing that opens here, and you just do that. And I used that before. It's very fast. It's exhaustive. It's actually exhaustive. You don't need anything else. And I think in the end, if you want DJs to use that, they don't have to use XML. The reason I'm doing this, right, or have been putting a lot of thing into this, is because I'm biased, right? I'm like, okay, I'm already using Linux Audio. This seems like a cool software. I want to get the most out of it. And I also kept in mind that, hey, maybe I can tell this to other people later on. But yeah, in general, it's just very difficult for a non-developer.
I have a question not regarding the tool itself, but your workflow maybe. Where did you source your music from? Where did you get the music from that you like to play?
Yeah. So in my case, it's very simple. I made a decision many years ago that I'm going to mix only my own music. So I just write it. I write all of it. So for the yesterday's event, I spent 2 months writing about 15 minutes of music, if not more. But in the end, there are many ways you can do this, and I understand that in Germany you just have to pay a certain amount of money. Actually, I know that because my wife has opened a dancing school where you have to understand how you're working with the tracks. I was actually surprised how simple all of this is. Like, maybe it's like you have some paperwork to do, but basically my understanding is that you can just pay a certain amount of money based on the amount of money you're making and stuff like that. So. But yeah, I just write all of my music. Yeah, that's the cool thing about the 4-deck setup is because now once I have the stupid 2-beat loop, I can go on to something else, set a 2-beat loop there, and now it becomes more sophisticated. Yeah, I just love 2-beat loops. So then you also have, by the way, you also have samplers here. This is something I didn't talk a lot about. So the sampler is basically, let me see if I have something to load into here. Yeah, so you can like add. Just the vocal sample I got from some program. So I'm able to like, it has the same controls that any normal music deck has, but it just not, it doesn't show it in the UI, but I can like, I'm now changing the volume. And then you can trigger it, and you can, oh yeah, or stop it like this. So yeah, so that's also part of the experience here. Yep. Any other questions? No. I'll take it that my lecture was exhaustively good. Yeah. Anyway, guys. Yeah. If you come up with questions or you have any questions later on, you know, I'll be here. So. But yeah, very thanks for listening to me, and I hope this was useful.